Welcome to episode 7 of the Groups Matter podcast show. It's a podcast by groupies for groupies. I know you don't like that term, Rick.
I'm getting used to it.
It's growing on you, right?
It's growing on me.
As always, here with Rick Howerton. Rick, it's really good to be here again.
That's exciting time, man.
Just a little bit about the podcast. Rick and I have been in the groups ministry, groups world for quite some time. Rick longer than I. I lead the work in short-term discipleship here at Lifeway, and Rick is our groups trainer specialist.
Yeah.
And Rick is on the road a lot of days out of the year. You're in churches, you're in front of groups, you're talking about principles and practices, all kinds of stuff, right?
Have a great opportunity to learn from a lot of different people.
So what we're trying to do here, and hopefully you will agree, is just deliver some helpful content in what you do for all the leaders, coaches, and education guys and education leaders and pastors and even group members out there as you develop group life and grow in your transformation. So it's in that spirit that we will continue. We've got a great show again, I think. Rick's going to be talking about a post that Bill Donahue has put up on his blog recently. And later on, we have Kirby Holmes.
Kirby Holmes from Gateway Church in Austin, Texas.
And I'm looking at these questions that we're going to be asking Kirby, and they look really interesting. So you're going to want to stick around for this. We're going to be talking a little bit about gender issues as they apply to groups ministry these days.
Interesting and somewhat controversial, maybe.
Somewhat controversial?
I think so.
I think so, too. So what have you been doing lately? I know we talk about you being all over the place. So what's hot on the agenda?
Well, what's hottest on my agenda right now is something called the Hebrews Initiative. Some months ago, as I was reading the book of Hebrews, I realized that this is a book for our time, that the people that this – the book of Hebrews is actually a sermon that was preached to a people who were being persecuted for their faith because as best they could, they were living their faith. And so it is written to a persecuted people, but those people were also drifting somewhat from the faith. And so this book of the Bible, as I was reading, I just realized this is a book for our time, that if we got tens of thousands of group members studying the book of Hebrews in the same season, we might see a movement take place. And I was honored that Lifeway blessed that idea. And so we are asking churches to consider doing 12 weeks of study in the book of Hebrews in the fall of this year, so between August and December, to do 12 weeks of study. And we've created everything a church needs. If they would like to do a church-wide campaign, they can go to HebrewsInitiative.com and find everything they need to do a church-wide campaign. Also at HebrewsInitiative.com, they'll find information about the movement and what it means and why we're doing it. Now, they will also find out that there are a couple of other ways that a church can be involved. So a church can be involved by the person who's the small group's point person saying to all of their groups. Now, they're not doing a campaign with sermons that relate to each week, but they can the group's pastor or the education minister can say all of our groups are going to do 12 weeks of study in Hebrews during this period. And another option is for a group simply to come on board. So I would be thrilled if anyone listening would go to HebrewsInitiative.com and check it out.
Funny you should use the term movement, because in the last several episodes, and you will again this episode in the last segment when we get to Rick's list, you're going to be picking up on that idea of movement again.
That's right.
And movement covers a lot of ground, the word does. You know, there's been movements that have been somewhat global or international. There's been movements that are more national. It could be any of those things for sure, but movement in this context means some different things, right?
Yeah, it means God is at work in something, and it's moving forward, and there is something transcendent, something beyond what man could accomplish or momentum that man could create.
So excited about having Kirby here and the Hebrews Initiative. It sounds like it's going really well so far.
It's exciting. We have thousands of churches, thousands of groups that have already registered to join the movement, and anyone can do that by going to HebrewsInitiative.com.
And so after the interview with Kirby, we'll get to everyone's favorite segment, Tweets of the Week, where we'll be hearing from or at least reporting on things that are going on in group life out in the churches and in the communities. And that's always good to hear from everybody and see that. And we would encourage you to follow Rick Howerton at RickHowerton and at BC Daniel, because we're looking for these Tweets of the Weeks to hear what's going on in your groups. Love to hear those stories. And then we'll get to Rick's list. which it looks like this episode is nine things to remember when discipling men.
Oh, yeah, that's important because men, when men are discipled, families are transformed. But all too often, we don't understand that men are somewhat different than women when it comes to being discipled.
So good choice there, you know, as a follow-up to what Kirby's going to be talking about. All right, so really excited about episode 7. We're already at 7. It's hard to believe. It's like the summer and the episodes are just clicking by.
It's going to be the perfect session because number 7 is the perfect number.
Of course it is. All right, so let's get to the post of the week this week. So why this post from Bill Donahue? Now, Bill's been around a long time at Willow Creek. One of the smarter guys I've been around. I think you would agree. Really good communicator. He is a very sound, solid thinker. But you know where he's different is there's a confluence of the way that he thinks. He thinks organizationally. He thinks biblically. He thinks like relational dynamics. He's got a lot of that stuff going on, and that's one of the things that makes him unique, I think, as a thought leader.
Boy, you couldn't have described it better, Brian. He is not only a genius when it comes to group life, he's also a leadership guru. And so it's really exciting. But now I do want to tell you, with this particular post, I chose not to give a list of things that he's thinking. As far as thinking about telling us we ought to be doing or what we can learn from him. Actually, Bill is a friend of mine. And when I saw this post, I wanted to share this because I want people to think about someone. I want them to think about themselves. And I'm just going to read the list, some of the list, and then kind of follow up. He talks about in this particular blog post, small group shutdown. That is, if his small group the small groups that he has been in throughout his lifetime, if they had shut down, what it would have meant to his life. And he starts with this. If his small group would have shut down, there would be no connection with Jesus, a leader, lover, and friend. Number two, he'd have a disastrous marriage to someone who did not follow God.
Wow.
There would be a misfire on God's moving me into a new career. You can see where this is headed, can't you? I would have never learned the real power of the gospel. I might not have many real, lifelong friends, deep, genuine, and for me, friends.
A recurring theme here at Groups Matter.
Yes. I would have had an undiscovered teaching gift. Evidently, someone spoke into his world in a group and said, Bill, you ought to teach.
Hey, you ever thought about teaching a group, Bill Donahue?
Amazing, isn't it? Amazing.
Yeah, it is.
He would have had participation in a weak church that had drifted from the truth. He says, I might never have attended graduate school for theology. I would imagine someone prompted him in a group to do that. I would have missed seeing real prayer and real healing. My own prayers and gifts would lay dormant or underutilized for years. Serving opportunities would have passed me by. International ministry and service would have likely evaded me. I would have missed the support I needed for my marriage. Raising kids would have been a disaster. My personal pain and suffering would have had much less support. My second and third career moves would have been made without wise counsel. I might not have had close friends in the group who would have become believers, and I would have missed tons of personal growth, love, and truth-telling I needed to hear. Even a guy as intellectual as Dr. Bill Donahue has real-life story to tell, and how different that story would have been if he wouldn't have been connected to groups all of these years. I wanted all of our groups pastors, education ministers, and other pastors to hear this list, and I want to make a suggestion to them. Brian, now this is an unusual thing to say in one of these podcasts. I would suggest that they go try to make the same list. And if they realize that they cannot create a list that shares these intimate and honest outcomes that lead them to believe that they truly have lived in community, that they go seek out a group that they can live in real community with.
Yeah, you can't lead people on a journey that you're not on yourself.
Precisely.
And something that's implied here, I think, is that our friend Bill was effective at extending the invitation for these things to happen.
Yes. You know, everyone can be in a group if they choose to be in a group. Many choose not to be in a group. And some that are listening may be saying, you don't understand. I'm the senior pastor at my church. I can't be that vulnerable. You need to be that vulnerable with some people. And you need to find a group of people that you can be that vulnerable with. And for those that are listening who think, I don't know that anyone could give me wise counsel. That means you're not a wise person. If you think you're so wise, no one could give you wise counsel, then wisdom has actually evaded you.
Well, and I think in addition to that, your group can't be a check mark in a box. It has to be something that you buy into, that you commit to get this kind of thing out of it, like the Bill has documented here. It has to be complicit. You have to bring something, even if it's just an open heart and willingness. Because I know a lot of times with group, with me, and probably others, you know, it's you have to fight the urge just to show up.
It requires more than that.
Yeah, you said it has to be something you commit to. It has to be something that you not just commit your body to, but you commit your heart to. Until you bring your heart into the group life, you're really not going to get out of it what you could get out of it.
Exactly. So that's Dr. Bill Donahue. He's got a blog. He posts on it fairly regularly. I think more than a lot of people anyway. And you can follow Bill on Twitter at Dr. Bill Donahue.
Yeah, and his address for his blog is drbilldonahue.com.
So great post, Rick. Thanks for bringing that. All right, I think we've got Kirby's going to be calling in here in just a minute. So how do you know Kirby Holmes?
Kirby and I met by some conferences I was attending, and he happened to be in attendance also. And because of our love for groups, we had some great conversations. And you just love this guy. He is a sweet, confident, powerful leader. And that's really important, especially with the topic that he's going to be discussing with us.
He is in Austin, Texas, and Austin is a different kind of town. And when that different kind of town gives him some extraordinary circumstances that he has to deal with that maybe a lot of people don't have to deal with out in their groups very regularly, or at least as regularly as he does. I have a pastor friend in California that deals with this kind of issue a lot more. And I asked him before, I said, what's that like? He said, to be honest, Brian, it wears me out.
That issue being what, Brian?
Well, the whole idea of gender, the identity and gender issues.
Yes, sexual identity.
Mm-hmm, sexual identity. So Kirby's going to be talking about that and how it relates to group. So here's the question going into this interview with Kirby, just for people to think about. Austin is definitely a different place. My question would be is how different is Austin really from most places?
My personal response, Brian, would be it's not that different. Every society has people who are fallen, and depravity leads to sin. And it may be that in some locations there are sins that are more prevalent because people move there in pockets because there are those who have the same bent that they have or the same frustration that they have or the same longing they have. But every society deals with the same issues because of human depravity.
All right, so I think we've got Kirby.
Well, we are really honored to have Kirby Holmes with us today, the small groups guy at Gateway Church in Austin, Texas. Kirby's church is known for reaching people who are far from Christ. Some would say those people who are on the fringes and even further than the fringes. Brian, what are you thinking right now?
Well, we've talked about fringes on the show before, and so I'm thinking that Kirby, I'm really interested to see what Kirby has to say. This may be different from what Greg did a few episodes ago. So I would kick us off by saying, just to reiterate, you know, Kirby, your church is known for reaching those that are on the fringes, on the margins, that are far from Christ, people who actually may be repulsed by just the idea of the church. I've heard it said, you know, I'm not going to darken the doors of a church, you know, that type. So how do you get these types, these people, to consider joining a group?
Yeah, it's a good question. I live in Austin, Texas, which is, you know, a large sort of urban environment, but predominantly kind of a postmodern thinking person, post-Christian kind of person. And yeah, there is a lot of just a skepticism and a cynicism about the church right here where we are in Austin. But what we've seen over the last 15 years at Gateway Church is there's an opportunity for us among people that are kind of in this place. What we found is that people usually take their first step towards church when there's a specific point of pain in their own life. And that pain seems to be more than maybe some of the hurts that they've experienced in the church or some of the irrelevance maybe they felt from the church in their childhood or growing up. And so usually that point of pain kind of drives them looking for a place of hope And we've really created an environment here at Gateway where there's a lot of buzz in our city about who we are as a church, because we're kind of a different kind of community. And I think what makes us a little bit different from maybe other church communities would be that we kind of consider our Sunday morning experience more like what Jesus did on the hillsides, what he would teach. I mean, the traditional place for teaching was in the synagogue, and it seemed like the sinners weren't that safe walking into synagogues and looking for an experience of hope with God. It seemed like there was more laws and judgments and rules that they had to live by, a code. And so when Jesus showed up on the scene to start teaching on the hillside and gathering together disciples and Pharisees and sinners, and everybody came to hear what Jesus had to say, and we created our Sunday morning environment to be a place where everybody could come, where no perfect people is allowed, come as you are, and that we give people an opportunity to hear a message of hope that God is good and God understands what's going on in your life. And then we really try to communicate with people in a language that's not super religious. It doesn't have a lot of the Christianese kind of language to make it really accessible for people that are showing up with hurt in their life. And so what we've seen over these last 15 years is that really the biggest front door into our community is through our Sunday morning gatherings. Now, our church has grown, obviously, from one small group 15 years ago to now we've got thousands of people that attend our service in two different locations. And we found that before people step into a small group community, they'll typically spend a year, if not 2 or 3 years, coming to our Sunday morning services. I find that to be what's really typically true of people at our church. Before they step into our small group, they've been in our Sunday morning services for that amount of time. I think they do that because they're trying to figure out, can I trust the church? And so they sit in the back row with their arms folded, trying to figure out, could I trust this church? I think they're also sitting there going, man, my life is painful. Does this church have anything to do to offer me hope and help and restoration and some of the points of pain I'm experiencing in my life? And I think it takes them a couple of years for them to finally say, you know what, I'm going to give this church a chance. I feel like the pastors teach with credibility. I think they teach and share about their lives with authenticity. I feel like this is a spiritual environment where I can connect with God, because they aren't really coming down on my behavior as much as they're just pointing me towards knowing and experiencing and loving Jesus. Eventually it's when we do our twice a year ask to say, would you join us and get into a community? Would you get into a small group with us? And we invite everybody to be a part of a crowd from our auditorium on a Sunday morning to come get into community with us. And that's why I hear a lot of people saying, you know what, the church was doing a big push to get us into community. And I finally feel like I really believe that I can trust this church and that God is good and that maybe this is my next step.
No, Rick's got a couple of questions, but just a quick follow-up. I think the idea of the pain point or the trauma being the point of disembarkation for greater spiritual formation is right on and with what we're talking about. But I would ask you, you know, have you guys identified ways there at Gateway? How do you go about maybe identifying what those pain points are or those aspects of trauma to facilitate mm-hmm. this process? I mean, is it just through that Sunday morning gathering and through just getting to know individuals in that context, or do you have additional measures in place?
Well, I think probably going back to the 1960s when it was kind of, hey, it's the if it feels good, do it generation. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll kind of throw off a lot of what was sort of traditional morality and sort of traditional institutions. And so the generation of the 60s, it seems to me, is where it really kicked off this let's pursue pleasure culture. And so now we're a couple of generations beyond that. And I think what you're seeing is a lot of people showing up going, wow, if it feels good, do it. That kind of lifestyle has not created the kind of results that I anticipated or expected life to produce. And so it shows up with marital problems. It shows up with parents not really knowing how to parents or children, being too loose and free on what it really looks like to parent. And so I think we see people showing up with a lot of relational hurt, a lot of relational wounds. It seems like a lot of it does show up in kind of people's relational world, that it's just not working out for them. And as much as they sort of said, oh, I'm an independent, free-thinking person, I don't need God or these other sort of church institutions to help me, the way forward for them isn't working out, and they're looking for something maybe that would help. And I still think there's a cynicism or a skepticism about coming back to church, and I think that's why they sit in that back row with arms folded, and they're not immediately willing to trust. So that's why I said, well, it takes 1, 2, 3 years before I'm seeing people take that step into our small group communities, because they're just not quite sure what they're going to get out of us as a church. And so we just are real patient with them about making that transition and not making them do something in a service like wearing, my first time to church pin, or making them stand up, in the service, or, stand up and shake the person's hand next to them at the service. Like, we give them some space to, as patiently as they need to move into believing that God is good and for them, we allow that space to exist.
Well, Kirby, you've said something that's very telling, and that is you create a weekend worship experience where they feel as though I'm a normal person in this room because my pastors are authentic. But 2 years till they get in a group. Now, I want to throw a hard question at you. I know I sent you these questions before we had this conversation. And the next one, as you know, is a tough one.
Okay.
And here's the deal. I've seen you lead a conference. In fact, you're doing a conference for us at the Groups Matter conference this August. When it comes to sexual identity, and as I was preparing these questions, somebody said to me, I think you ought to ask him this question, a very, very practical question, and that is this. What would you as a small group point person do if a transgender male wanted to join a men's small group? How would you handle that?
Well, it's not theoretical for us, because we actually had this situation, and this has happened within our church, is that we had a small group leader. They were leading a small group, and it turns out his neighbor, they were sort of neighbor friends. They're not they're more probably acquaintances than they were friends. But it turns out his neighbor, he noticed that although they were married, that the wife had kind of taken off after their divorce, and the man that was living next door was able to talk to one of our members from Gateway, who's this small group leader. And because of the divorce, the man was just kind of in pain and what's his future going to be? And so our small group leader said, well, if you'd like to come and be a part of our community, we have a small group that meets, every week, and told him when it was. And so this man said, well, just wanted to let you know, one thing I'm exploring right now is that I'm a transgendered man. I sometimes dress as a woman, and obviously that was a part of why my marriage didn't eventually work out. So our small group leader said, well, you know what? You're welcome to come be a part of our small group, whether you want to come as a man or come as a woman. Now, it was a mixed gender group, so there were men and women there, but our small group leader said, if you'd like to join us, you're welcome to come join us. So this is something that we have gone through, and there were times when I saw this man at our services dressed as a woman. There were times when he came to classes or seminars we're doing at the church, and he came dressed as a man. But this is out of the realm of theory into the realm of practice in our church.
Yeah. So you obviously you treated them with equal respect and equal honor, and did as Jesus would have done, sounds like.
Yeah, I think as I was exploring that conversation with that small group leader, because I was his coach at the time, and we'd have conversations around, what's going on, I started to learn more about what is going on with some of this gender identity issue, and understanding transgendered and transsexual are, sort of two different things, and, started to explore what are the nuances when you get into sexuality and how people are sort of exploring their inner world of sexuality. And transgendered is more like what we see from Bruce Jenner, where he's saying, my body is as if I'm man, but I feel like my soul is woman. And so my gender that he wants to identify with is more with his soul, as if he's a woman. But if you saw the Bruce Jenner interview, you'd see that he also says, yeah, but in terms of sexualizing relationships, I could still see myself being with a woman physically, sexually, which is very interesting to start to get into the dynamics of what's going on with gender identity. But I think when it comes to a group, in a small group of church that we've got to live out that that model that has been spoken, I think, so eloquently and so importantly in the last couple of years, is we want to invite people to belong in our community before they believe the things that we believe or even behave the way we behave, that there's a sense of we're going to honor belonging first. And so in this instance, I think it's really important to say, hey, no matter where you are sort of gender identity-wise and what you're going through with that, it doesn't matter for us right now. What matters is if you want a place to belong because you're hurting and questioning some things, would you just come be a part of our community, and we want to love on you and get to know you.
Well, and Kerry, just so if I can speak just to the listening audience real quickly, I want to make sure that no one thinks that we are stating that this is an okay activity, that this is an okay thing to do. We are talking about, and Kirby's responding to a question about how to treat people who are heading down pathways that would be abhorrent to many people in the group, and yet they need Jesus. So, Kirby, yeah. I can't thank you enough for such an honest and great response. We've run out of time, so I just want to thank you, man, for joining us in this conversation. It's always good to hear your voice, Kirby, and to be with you. Thanks, man.
Yeah, let's do it again. Thanks, Kirby. Good to have you on the show.
Yep, thanks, guys. Really enjoyed it.
Wow, that's the first time I've met Kirby. Here's Austin, Texas. I've never been there, but I've always heard about it a little bit. I mean, they pride themselves on being Austin, Texas, right? It's a really neat place. A lot of people want to go there. He's dealing with a reality.
Yes.
And so, you know, this is not espousing anything. It's certainly not condoning anything. This is the world that we are moving into.
Mm-hmm.
I heard, just to pick up on what Kirby was saying or follow up a little bit, I heard Russell Moore say one time, I was in a meeting with him, and he said the sexual revolution will go farther than you can imagine, but in the end, it will not live up to its promises. That's where Kirby's coming from. I liked his answer to my second question about how do you identify it. I think I heard him say it identifies itself.
Yes.
That if you'll pay attention, you'll see the brokenness and you'll have an opportunity to speak into that. And they use that as their point of entry to ministry and disciple making.
That's right, Brian. I once heard Tim Keller, actually I went searching for information when we were, all of us in church leadership were asking, what do we do as the homosexual community gains more ground? And I don't mean that from a political perspective. Rather, they're getting heard and they're being accepted.
Sure.
And Tim Keller said something that I think is just astounding. In an interview on a college campus with students that were, you could tell, were ready to take him out as this conference. And the question to him was basically, how should Christians treat homosexual people? From it looked like from a non-believing student in a secular setting. And his response was genius and biblical. And when anything that's biblical is genius because it comes from God. And he just said there are two types of people in the world. There are those of us who are in Christ. And I won't get it exactly right. Tim Keller, please don't call because I am not you and you're so smart. But there are two types of people. There are those who are brothers and sisters in Christ and those who are our neighbors. And when we put anyone in any other category, in essence, we've degraded them. And we believers should treat everyone as our neighbors.
Yeah, and you made that point. There was a great book written by George Hunter years ago. It's getting to be longer ago. It doesn't seem that far away, but I think it is. It's called The Celtic Way of Evangelism. And in that book, he unpacked this idea of monastic community. And I remember the statement he made in that was, people are more apt to come to know Christ once accepted into a community as opposed to keeping them at arm's length until they agree with you. And I think Kirby's point is, we want these guys to come to us. We'd rather them be working out their faith in our community than trying to go outside of the gospel, of a gospel-centered, Jesus-loving community, trying to work that out.
Yes.
This is a question that I asked. I was on an ordination council recently, and I asked this question. And I was surprised that the guys didn't really have an answer, because I think this is something that we all need to be wrestling. And the question actually came from a real situation. And, I've asked several people this and get all kinds of answers. I would think, though, what I would do, my answer to the question is, what would you as the small group point person do if a transgendered male wanted to join a men's small group? I would invite them into a discipling relationship. That's what I would do first. There's a lot of a lot of variables there, mm-hmm. but you certainly want them to be in that relationship, don't you think?
Oh, they're great. And every individual is different. One person might be very open to meeting with you and a few others, or just you. And whether or not they're struggling with whether or not it's sin, they're just more comfortable with one other person. Someone else might be more comfortable in a group. But I think ultimately we just have to keep in mind that Jesus showed love to all, whether they were in him yet or not. And he showed compassion to everyone. And that, and all of us are on a journey. I mean, those of you that can't hear, I'm a big guy. My journey is gluttony. Somebody else's journey is transgender living. Yep. Someone else's journey is homosexuality. And what we want to be careful about is not to diminish any of those sins by saying, well, gluttony's not as bad as. No, the truth is sin, and it's all bad. And we journey with each other on, with the goal of, those of us who have already crossed the line into faith, with the goal of no longer living in that sin.
In terms of group life, I think you made a very good point. Equal respect, equal honor.
Yes.
And I think that's the rule of the day. We want people in our groups. Now, what groups and how those groups are functioning, I think the whole notion of gender identity I think it's a big deal. I mean, just personally, it's a big deal. So I think there needs to be some sensitivity there, but you definitely want people in those discipling relationships, definitely.
In those two terms, with honor and respect, is how you treat a neighbor. That's what Jesus told us to do, is to treat our neighbors with respect and honor.
Well, appreciate Kirby being with us and taking that on, because that is not light.
Great conversation. Important conversation. A necessary conversation. And I'm glad we're able to approach these kinds of conversations in our podcast.
Well, I got to think that more and more this is going to be a part of the group life as we know it.
Yes.
I mean, answering and wrestling with these issues. All right. So good to have Kirby. Let's get him back. That was very insightful.
For sure.
All right, Rick, let's head on to Tweets of the Week.
Love the Tweets of the Week.
So these are Tweets of the Week for Episode 7 of the Groups Matter podcast show. You want to kick us off?
I do. A guy named Greg Troxell, it is at GTROXELL. I think he just hit right in the middle of what groups should be about. And all he says is, preparing disciples who make disciples. I mean, that is the goal, to make disciples who make disciples. He gets it. I'd love to sit down and talk to him and see how they're doing that.
Yeah, this is discipleship is something that we talk a lot about, both on the show and outside of the show, that disciples making disciples is, you know, a big part of what we do.
Yes.
It is the objective.
That is the objective.
Helping churches in their ministry of making disciples.
That's what Lifeway is all about.
All right. I'm going to go with Nicole Willis. This is at @Anna_Nicole1995. I love Thursdays. Hashtag small group. Hashtag God is always there. Where two or three are gathered in my name, I will be with you.
That speaks volumes. Don't you love it that somebody is that excited about going to group on Thursday night?
That's exactly why I picked that one. It's the proclamation of this truth that God is always there. There's so much about that assurance, that knowing at this space, you know, every week, I know that I'm going to go somewhere where I know God is there and I am with fellow people on the journey.
That is special, man. That is special. Hey, I want to throw in Forest Hill Church. It's at @FHC_KnowGrowGo. And this is fantastic. All it reads is, there is nothing better than good friends, quiet time, and rocking chairs. Hashtag small group, hashtag retreat. I would imagine that their small group or a couple of small groups, maybe their whole small group ministry, is on a retreat. And what I love about it is, these are good friends. They're being quiet and they're rocking in chairs. Now, I don't want to overread this thing, but in my mind's eye, I see a group of people who are sitting on a porch somewhere, four or five of them, rocking chairs next to one another, no one speaking a word. And someone would think, boy, that's not much fun. Nobody's talking. I'll never forget, I had a friend of mine and I got into a real awkward situation, carbon monoxide poisoning. And we were in a hotel. There were four or five of us in the room, and I was a young college minister. And they carried us out and put us – we were just coming to consciousness, and they carried us out and put us in these ambulances, in this ambulance. And there was one guy with me. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We were
– you never told me that story.
I probably shouldn't have started this story. We were just a few minutes from death, they told us. But as they were reviving us a bit, we had passed out but didn't die. Obviously, I'm still here. And he was laying in the ambulance next to me, and someone – I heard someone say to him, would you like to say something to Rick? I think they thought we might not make it. And he said, we're such close friends, we don't have to talk. And that impacted me so much. And this is what I thought when I read this. These people are such close friends, they don't need to talk in order to know how much they care for each other.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for that and not having to feel like you have to contribute words when your presence is enough. You know, and I guess to some level, that is like in terms of relationships, that is the I want to say that's one of the big places that a group can go.
Yes.
If you can get to that, you know, because you just don't have those relationships that – you don't have that many of those relationships where there's no pressure to contribute words. You can just exist together.
It's very special.
At least for a period of time, right?
Yeah, that's right.
I was going to say, you know, how much I really like the word retreat. So in that tweet.
That's a good word.
Retreat is a good word. Next tweet of the week is from Nicholas Lindsay. I think that's how I'm going to say that. This is at Nick, L-E-N-Z-I, 2 hashtag small group killers. Number one, gossip. Number two, the lack of planning. How would you react to that?
Well, first of all, I say Nick is a friend of mine. He's up in New York City area. But my response to what he's saying is he nailed it. A gossip can kill a group faster than nearly anything, and a leader who doesn't plan never has a group that accomplishes much.
What is planning in group leadership? I mean, how do you define that? Because there is a range, right, from zero to a lot. So what is – I mean, so where are all those ranges that are comfortable? Because I know there's a lot – I know on the publishing side, we give a lot of thought to preparation and how much any given short-term or any small group Bible study, how much effort it takes. And I know we try and build in a range of – so the leader that wants to spend a lot of time in prep has the tools that he or she needs, but also that group of leader that maybe doesn't spend quite as much time can lead the group because it's intuitive enough.
Well, Brian, I think the real question is not are we talking about planning for a meeting, but are we planning for a group to be Christian community in totality? So certainly a good group leader will do preparation for the meeting. They'll prepare their home if they're hosting. They'll prepare their home for people to come. They'll get the lights the right way. They'll get the temperature the right temperature. They'll put the dog away in case somebody's frightened of their pet, et cetera. They'll get into the Bible study in preparation to lead the Bible study conversation, all those kinds of things. But I think so often what we miss is if we're going to have a holistic group that is biblical, we're also asking people to help us plan to be missional in the community where we exist. And we'll also ask people to plan when there's a crisis, someone has surgery, let's plan on how we can get meals to their home and take care of their family, how we can help with child care, et cetera. So I think planning goes far beyond thinking about the meeting to what it means to be biblical community in totality.
Which is what we've talked about before on the show, which you need to be all in.
Yes.
This is an all-in. It's an emotional engagement. You have to be present. It's the art of being present. Well, that's going to do it for Tweets of the Week for Episode 7. And please follow us on Twitter. It's at Rick Howerton, R-I-C-K-H-O-W-E-R-T-O-N, at BC Daniel. And we will follow you back. We want to hear just anything about your group life, any tips, posts, any information that you found, any things that's working, maybe some things that maybe even aren't working, and we would love to get those on the show. So we'll be looking for those and favoriting those tweets and getting them on a future episode of the Groups Matter podcast show. All right, so Rick, next segment. Are you ready?
Yes, sir.
So we're going to be talking about things to remember when discipling men. Real important, we've already kind of hinted at or at least mentioned how central men's discipleship is just in the effectiveness of a church body.
I was once asked if I'd do a session on discipling men, and I had to sit down and think about, were there differentiators between men and women when it came to discipling men? And there were some markers I thought were important. Let me just share a few of those. One is that men need to see a vision. They need to know that you've got a goal in mind. And they need to see what the final outcome will be if they work toward the goal alongside you. That keeps them in the game and keeps them motivated. The second thing is that men need social time, not just meeting times. Social time on the golf course, at the lake, on the ball field. That's what makes the meeting time come to life. Men will break down barriers much more naturally away from the meeting than during the meeting. The other thing I think men, we need to remember about men and being disciples is that men are warriors and need an enemy to fight and a battle to win. This is just the heart of a man. We need to be certain that they know that there is an enemy and his name is Satan.
Amen.
It's very important. And men also need a bar to be raised high. Boredom sets in quickly when a goal is easily attainable for men. The next point is that men don't read. Now, I know that's an overstatement. But for the most part, men are not going to pick up a book and read it. You may be a book junkie. If you're their discipler, they may consider book junk. Now, don't misunderstand me. We all have to be reading to grow. But every once in a while, I've talked with men who are trying to disciple other men. And they begin, man, I tried to give him this book to read. It changed my life. I just couldn't get these guys to read this book.
You know, two things there. I think part of the problem there is when it feels prescriptive and like a book assignment that's going to have like a book report or something along those lines at the end of it. I think that's a big turnoff. And I would add a friend of mine that's a church plant in Colorado, a church planter in Colorado has had some success getting men to read books by picking up something like Lone Survivor. Which is, you know, I don't know if you guys are familiar with that. A movie was made in the last year, and very military, Navy SEALs, has nothing to do with discipleship, but it got them together.
Wow.
And that opened up all kinds of doors for other conversations just because they had this common experience. So maybe it just doesn't – you need to think about what book you would recommend and remember the objective.
Well, Brian, that's really wise counsel. That's really good. The next thing is men will dodge real-life issues in conversation by deflecting and talking about facts. So, for instance, you might ask a guy what God's teaching him during his daily time with God. His response might be to tell you he had his quiet time three times this week. He didn't tell you what you asked him. You're going to have to dig deeper. You're going to have to probe a little harder to get to the heart issues.
So how have you found is an effective way of doing that?
Oh, it's pretty easy, actually. This is not hard. Tell me more. And let the silence linger. At some point, he will jump in and join in the conversation. He may say, I'm not sure what you mean. His heart may not let him go there. Then you illustrate in your own quiet time what God's been saying to you. This is what I mean. How about you? What's going on in your world there? So that's important. I just want to capture a couple more of these real quickly. I'll just say this. I want to be very careful. This was my journey in my younger life. It may not be the average man. So if this sounds blatant, it sounds outrageous, I'll just say it. Men will lie to you. Let me tell you what I mean by this. In my own journey years and years ago, every accountability list I've ever seen had as the last question something like this. Were any of your responses misleading or all out lies? And I need to fess up because it's been long enough now I don't think about it much. I would even lie on that question. Because I really didn't want to talk about my real issues. I think men are good at dodges, and they really don't want to climb into spaces that are uncomfortable. Now, please hear this. Some people will say it's because of certain types of sin. That's not necessarily true. It may be because they've never been a person who's been self-aware enough that they even are willing to probe into their deepest sins or their deepest hurts or even their deepest longings. So they may outrightly mislead you, even if you're just asking about if you could dream your life to be different, what would it be? They may just fall in line in order to keep there from being an uncomfortable moment, because they don't want to climb into any space that has to do with heart issues. So those are a few things to think about, I think.
You know, in the Disciples Path series that you and I have worked on, we identified the four agents that best facilitate transformation in a group context as modeling, practicing, relationship or community, and then some means of study, devotion, knowledge.
Yes.
I think when you're discipling men, those first two are probably key, not to the exclusion of the last two, but I think modeling and practice, I think we should keep in mind that with men, it's more about that exchange and about the influence man to man than it is maybe the relationship, because we tend to be – we're relational beings, but that tends to be, I think, take a back seat to other ways that we experience transformation and discipleship.
Boy, Brian, that's a really good point. If most men, if they're being discipled by or they're walking alongside a man that they deeply respect, that person being a model for them, it comes naturally. It doesn't even have to be proclaimed. They just allow them to be their models.
That's a real good list, and I'm sure this is not the last time that we will be talking about discipleship and men and groups ministry. So it's a good place to start. Things to remember when discipling men. Any last thoughts on that and the differences in men and women in this respect?
You know, actually, I don't think so. I certainly don't want to act like I'm an expert in men and women and disciple making and the differentiators. I just think we need to keep in mind that when we start discipling men, they're not going to climb into 13-week studies very often. Some men will, but if you're going to get men to do that, you need to make, as I mentioned, you need to let them know that the vision is, the goal is, and that this is what it's going to take to accomplish that. So let me relate it to a football team. So somebody goes out for their high school football team. The first thing the coach does at the first big meeting is, guys, my goal is for us to win the state championship. For that to happen, you've got to do the following things. This is what we're talking about. If men are going to commit deeply to high expectations, they first deserve to know what those expectations are and make a promise to do those things before they ever engage in any of those things.
You know, when we moved back from when we moved to Nashville from New Mexico, you know, in New Mexico and out west, it's just a whole different atmosphere in terms of like time management and productivity. All the men's groups that were here when we moved, like, we're at like 5 a.m. in the morning. I mean, like the middle of the night, Rick. I mean, you have to get up at like 3 o'clock and get there by 5, and then by the time lunch rolls around, you've put in like 9 hours already. I mean, it's crazy. And it's just interesting the difference between when men feel like they will give time to something like this, because a lot of times it's not at night, it's on Saturdays, but Saturdays there's usually a list of things to get done. So you have to be real intentional about this.
Yes.
That's one of the things that it was like, these people they live entire lives before 7 a.m. It was just the craziest thing. But, you know, you got to do what you got to do. I know a lot of men do that, and, you know, God bless them for doing it. That is strong.
But Brian, all men won't do that. So we also need to keep in mind there are men who would rather get together during their lunch break, men who'd rather get together in the evening. And we don't want to just make it, you don't love Jesus enough to be discipled unless you're willing to show up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, because you'll lose them.
That's right.
Well, that's going to wrap it up for episode 7 of the Groups Matter podcast show. Thanks, Rick. It's great.
It's been a great week.
Really enjoyed having Kirby.
Yes.
We would like to thank our sponsors, the Hebrew Initiative. Rick talked about that at the top of the show. And Rick, what's that website again?
HebrewsInitiative.com.
We look forward to being with you for episode 8 next week, when we'll plan to have Eddie Mosley.
Eddie Mosley.
Eddie Mosley will be with us. He is the pastor of disciple making at
Life Point Church,
just outside of Nashville. Thanks for joining us. Hope you'll be back with us for episode 8. And we'll see you next time.